Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Canadian PodCow. My name's Andrew Campbell, and I'm with Sarah Sash, as always, out in BC. Sarah, how are things going? You're home for once in the winter.
Yeah, we've seen each other not too long ago. I was fortunate to just be in your neck of the woods at the Dairy Farmers of Ontario AGM celebrating 60 years, which was very cool. We don't have butter sculptures in British Columbia, so I was pumped.
Well, you know what? To be fair, I don't remember the butter sculpture last year. I think it must be we only do it every 60 years.
Special occasions.
When we do it, special occasions to do it would be about as but it was great to see you and very soon and this is just kind of more your travel schedule is quite full this time of year with lots of meetings. And it's just fortunate we get to run into each other again at the annual policy conference for Dairy Farmers of Canada shortly.
Yes, I'm looking forward to that one. It seems super timely that we're getting together when there's going to be so very, very much to talk about with everything happening, not only in the Canadian political situation, but also internationally with our neighbors to the south, other things around. I think there's going to be some great content there, and hopefully we can secure some great interviews.
That's right, because the next episode is going to be from the annual policy conference, so stay tuned to the feed for that. But in the meantime, there is, you talk about what's going on in the world, Sarah, there is a pile going on. And, you know, definitely the thing that I think is all consuming right now is since the American election, since the inauguration, you know, a couple of weeks ago, there's been a lot of uncertainty. What could this bumpy ride be?
Yeah, it's already been a little bumpy, eh? And the political landscape is feeling very unpredictable. So I think today we're going to take a look at that. We're going to speak with someone who's actually quite an expert in this department. And we'll set the tone. We'll start talking about all of these political and surrounding things.
And just kind of see what the economic ramification might be coming up on the Canadian PodCow. Our guest today has more than 20 years of experience in the Quebec and Canadian agri-food sector. He studied agronomy at Laval University and was awarded a master's degree in business administration and agri-food management and perfected his craft in agribusiness at the Harvard Business School.
Wow. He served as an economist with UPA, so that's the Union of Agricultural Producers, and was deputy general manager for the Quebec Beef Cattle Producers, as well as a senior economist with Le Coop Fédérée and director of economic affairs with Les Éleveurs de Porc du Québec. I think that's pigs. He is now senior director of agriculture and strategy at the National Bank. Vincent Cloutier, welcome to the Canadian PodCow.
Thank you very much. How are you?
Oh, we are very well, Vincent, and I can't imagine being an agricultural economist in these days because there's no shortage of excitement in terms of what could be, what is happening, and just really where everybody's kind of mindset is as they try to make their farm business plans over the next, you know, whether it's for 2025 or beyond. So I guess maybe let's start there in terms of like, let's do a general overview in terms of just where farm profitability is at in Canada in 2025.
Actually, ag is doing rather well, but we can't talk about ag as a whole, eh? Because there's different realities in the hog industry, grain industry, and in the supply managed sectors. But ag policies are strong, supply management is strong, and there's challenges ahead. We'll discuss some of them, but overall, I think we can be quite confident for the coming years, despite all that.
So when we think about the climate around us at any of those industries, the Bank of Canada just cut the interest rate by 25 basis points this last week to 3%. This was the sixth consecutive reduction since June. And many will see this as good news for the ag sector. I would think good news for most sectors. What do you think?
It's especially good for the ag industry. And here's why. It takes a lot of capital to generate cash in ag. So for every dollar of revenue it takes, depending on the sectors, depending on the provinces, between $8 and $12 of assets. So it takes a lot of capital. And when the cost of this capital goes up, it hurts farmers quite a bit. So having those rates going down the way they've been doing for close to 8 months now, I believe, is something that is very interesting. And there's a window of opportunity to start investing again. And maybe there's a window of opportunity to rethink about the way we manage the risk related to interest rates in the coming years.
I'm glad you said that. I like low interest rates. I'm very, very happy when the interest rate goes down. So, but the other one that's interesting here that's kind of been on the move of late is obviously the Canadian dollar compared to the US. And maybe we can break this into kind of two different categories, Vincent, in terms of, you know, what it means for Canadian dairy, because obviously our impact is different than a lot of other sectors, you know, within ag, particularly those exporting. But then, you know, a lot are also, whether they're selling grain, whether they're selling beef, you know, are involved in other sectors. Can you kind of break those two? What's where the dollar is moving at today compared to the US? What's that doing for both those export sectors and then Canadian dairy as a whole?
Dollar is indeed quite low, and we expect it could get even lower relative to the US dollars in the coming months. This is something that is rather positive for pork exports and beef exports and grain export, etc. But let's always recall that we do import a lot of inputs in ag. So we import a lot of fertilizers, lots of farm equipment, and even all those commodities that are traded on a U.S. dollar base are get relatively more expensive for us. So a low dollars means more expensive imports, and this can bring inflation in our economy. So if the fertilizers or the farm equipment are more expensive due to the dollar, well, it means inflation. So this is sort of a double-edged knife. So that's something we need to take into account. What's good with support management, though, is that the cost of production is considered when in establishing the price of milk, the farm gate price of milk. So we started by talking about the ag policy, supply management, how solid it is. Well, here's another example of how efficient it is.
So you mentioned inflation, Vincent, in terms of what that means for producers, particularly those that are importing, whether it's, you know, new equipment or whatever it happens to be. Can we flip that inflation question to the consumer side too? Because obviously that's been an enormous concern for consumers when we talk about inflation. I was watching the news this morning and they continue to talk about what the high price of food, you know, has done. Can you talk a little bit about, you know, what the trend in terms of consumer demand looks like, you know, particularly for agri-food products, when we know that market's always going to be there, they have to eat. But what does that trend look like for those of us in the sector?
Okay. Consumers are very sensitive to taste. They want to buy stuff that tastes good. Even if stuff is cheap, if it's not good, they won't buy it. But let's always recall that price of food is a very important factor in their, buying behavior. And a certain number of consumers, yes, they are, they try and focus on buying local, or they expect some attributes to their food. But let's be realistic. Those consumers that are willing to pay more or significantly more for those assets, yeah, it's a rather small portion of the consumers. So we have to be aware that, those consumers, this market is always more demanding. But We have to remain competitive because those consumers, they are very price sensitive, I would say, and we've seen it pretty obviously in the last couple of years during this high inflation era. the behavior of many consumers did move in that direction.
I think as producers, we feel like Canadian dairy is something we do especially well in terms of being able to actually produce for Canadians in the country. So maybe we've got less supply chain disruptions than other industries, you might say. But I'm curious, in the ag landscape and surrounding, how you would see supply chain disruptions and also labor, which is a major input to being able to produce in the country, in Canada. How do you see those things going in terms of labor shortages, supply chain disruptions, and those things that impact our ability to produce evolving in 2025?
COVID did recall us that those supply chains can be broken, can be hurt, and can hurt us. And since then, things got back to something more normal. But here's a fact, or here's a sort of boring provision. The risk in this business environment is important. Geopolitically, things can get worse than they are, and they could affect the supply chains as well. So we need to be ready for anything. This is something new in this world. And in terms of labor, yes, we need labor on farms, and a significant part, and even growing part of this labor comes from Central America now. And this is crucial to our farms and businesses. And let's hope that we will be able to rely on this workforce in the coming years. But let's always recall that there's a risk there. And COVID did remind us that, having those people in and out the country was a challenge, and it could get or it could be a challenge again. So those risks, they are not going away. I would like to be, let's say, more positive on that, but I believe that we live in a riskier environment than before.
Riskier environment. That seems like a really good segue, Vincent, into a topic that I think we've set a record. We've spoken for a little over 10 minutes now, and we've never said the word Trump yet. A new Canadian record, I think, for this week, because obviously the elephant in the room is, what is Donald Trump going to do? And you talk about risks. There's a lot of big question marks. In the next few days, there's talk of tariffs on Canadian exports, coming for that 1st of February. Let's go through a couple hypotheticals. If that does happen, whether it is the 1st or after, what's it mean for Canada?
First of all, let's say, what level of tariffs on what goods and for how long, we don't know. And does he even know? I'm not sure. So let's prepare for the worst, hope for the best. Let's talk about the worst, okay? 25% tariffs all across the board. First of all, we don't believe my colleagues, general economists, they do not believe it's a base case scenario. The inflation that would arise from that scenario in the U.S. would be terrible, and it would, offset the gains from the tariffs themselves. So this is not a likely scenario for us. Should it happen, it would seriously hurt, the hog industry, the beef industry, the maple syrup. On a per capita basis, we are one of the largest food exporters in the world. So should that happen, it would be bad. Will that happen? There will likely be some tariffs. At that level, we do not think.
So we have a lot of different exposure, I would say, in this situation in the Canadian dairy industry than some of those other industries you've mentioned. And we don't actually really know here what Donald Trump is after, but we know he's targeted Canadian dairy in the past. And I'm curious in terms of your insights on how you think it might go this time, not that you would know, but from your perspective, how, if Canadian dairy is still considered a target and why you might say that would or wouldn't be.
Okay. First of all, let's talk about this global environment as a whole, okay? I believe that we are going back into a more protectionist era. When you take a look back at those last 30 or 40 years, I mean, there was a lot of globalizations, WTO, FTAs, those CETA, CPTPP, etc. There's a sort of a backward move now. Okay, we are going back into a more protectionist environment. My question for you, my question for us, my question for everybody is, how is supply management coping with such a business environment? My answer is that it fits pretty well into a more protectionist environment because it is a very protectionist system. So for those who would say or think that supply management won't go through the second mandate of Trump, I'm not there at all. I don't believe in those catastrophic scenarios. Now, do we believe or do I believe in status quo? Not at all. I think something will happen. Now, what is it going to be? We had an idea of it recently when the upcoming Secretary of Trade was questioned by the Senate. So, Mr. Lutnick, so he talked about dairy farmers. He said that dairy farmers in the U.S. were unfairly treated by Canada, whatever. So we will find out what it means. I have a couple ideas of what it means, though, and if you want, we can share some thoughts on it.
Please, I would love to know.
Okay, so we need to differentiate the current context and compare it with the 2016 context. In 2016, President Trump and the American dairy lobby were very vocal about additional access to the Canadian market. And Trump was talking about that all across the board. So every opportunity he had to say that he needed more Canadian market access, he was talking about that. Now, you don't hear that. And what is the American dairy lobby talking about? They are not talking about new access to our market. They talk about the current tariff rate quotas. So who owns them? The processors, the retailers, or somebody else. So they say that due to the allocation of those TRQs and maybe the specific products that are included in many of them, well, they don't have a fair access to our market. So should we fear additional TRQs or should we expect some tweaking to the current TRQs, which will indeed increase the quantity of dairy products that come into Canada? I think we need to expect some tweaking, but I am a firm believer that our negotiators have a lot of room to work with by adjusting those TRQs way before granting other TRQs.
Because we do know, and this is my understanding, so correct me if I'm wrong, but that the amount of dairy coming into Canada from the U.S. is not fulfilling that full access on the TRQs. So you're really thinking that probably what comes out at the very least is they'll be maxing those out if they can tweak them the way they want.
This is exactly what they want and what they say they want. And when you go on their website, you read about those TRQs being owned and managed by the processors versus other parts of the value chain. I mean, this is an old battle. There is this legal battle between Canada, the U.S., and New Zealand. It will be on the table in 2025, and we will hear about it all the time. Now, we will very often hear the cliche phrase, well, supply management is on the table. Some specifics of the TRQs are on the table. Is supply management on the table? I don't believe so.
So then, just briefly before we head into a break, the other side of that is obviously how, when you talk about that protectionist agenda, the protectionist mentality coming forward from the U.S., that obviously probably isn't as good news for sectors like grain, hog, beef. But give me a little idea. That's the U.S., the export with the U.S. market. Does that lead to more global protection, Vincent, or is it a kind of a case of they'll insulate themselves and we'll continue to trade in a more open global trading environment with other countries? Where does it go?
I think Trump's election does crystallize this return to a protectionist era. We've felt it for quite some time, and I don't believe this is something absolutely new, because it's just the continuation of a trend, and I don't believe it is in an only U.S. thing as well. So it would bring us to let's say, try to reinforce commercial bridges with our partners. We need to do that because we need to export food. And despite those fears that I have regarding a more protectionist world, there's a very harsh reality that does not go away. And here it is. For decades, North America and South America have produced more food to feed people in Southern Asia. I mean, this is something that could be, it's more complicated than that, but those flows have been growing for decades now. And you know what? They will need to keep growing. So, despite those barriers to trade, food will have to move, and we are in a good position to keep producing food. And I mean grain, I mean canola oil, I mean beef, I mean pork, I mean maple syrup, etc. We are in a good position to keep feeding the world in those export sectors.
Well, you've certainly piqued our interest with positivity on the opportunities ahead. We need to take a quick break, and then we'll dig deeper into what we can expect in the months ahead. Stay right there.
As Canadian dairy farmers, we follow ProAction, Dairy Farmers of Canada's national quality assurance program with 6 modules. Modules like milk quality, that stands for high standards of milk production. Or food safety, producing milk that meets 42 requirements. And animal care, that means caring for every cow. ProAction sets standards of excellence. That's what's behind the Blue Cow logo. Dairy Farmers of Canada.
Welcome back to the Canadian Podcast with our guest, Vincent Cloutier, Senior Director, Agriculture Strategy at National Bank. Vincent, when it comes to trade, we know Donald Trump wants to reopen CUSMA. It was supposed to be a review. Now we feel like maybe it's going to be a renegotiation. No matter what, there's a scheduled review of the deal in 2026. So I'm curious what your perspective is on the potential risks for supply managed sectors, including dairy, in this whole process specifically. Because, I mean, there's all kinds of things that might come up for Canada, but specifically on supply management, what are you seeing going forward?
So if it's only a review, we are likely going to see some tweaking in the TRQs first. More TRQs, we cannot exclude that, but to me, it's not the base case scenario as we were talking before. The American dairy lobby wants to see some adjustment to who owns those TRQs in Canada, either the processors, the retailers, etc. So we might see some changes there, but we cannot exclude new TRQs, even if it's not the base case scenario. Now, should it not be a review, but let's imagine President Trump would like to tear this deal that he signed himself in 2020 and then start from scratch. That would indeed increase the risk we face in such a negotiation. But just as for these tariffs we did discuss earlier, we do not know. So let's wait and see. Let's prepare for the worst, hope for the best.
So we were talking on the break a bit about your optimism, which I do appreciate, I have to say, when so much of this is such a muddle. I'm curious if you see any specific opportunities in all of this, and whether there's an opportunity for our sectors to make some gains in a situation like this.
It won't be easy to make gains because we will be very defensive during this this whole process from a dairy industry standpoint. But as per the, let's say, the curious things that did arise from this 2020 COSMA ratification, there was this curious solid non-fats export cap, you know? So we have to declare to the U.S. How much skim milk powder we do export, and if we do exceed some cap, there could be some fines. Well, that is, to me, highly curious. Could we get rid of that? This is maybe some of the gains we could do through some negotiations. And let's always recall, yeah, we are a small country. They are a big country. But if this is going to be a negotiation, and Canada has a lot not only to offer, but U.S. needs a lot from what we have to sell, and they need us, and their economy would not be what it is without us. So it will, I think that we have, we can get into this negotiation with a certain level of confidence, even if we need to remain very realistic when dealing with a guy like Donald Trump.
So as we do kind of, you know, realize that potential, you know, for both, I think this goes both ways in terms of, you know, how can Canada's dairy industry work collaboratively with other sectors to strengthen the position, as you said, that Canada is in, and make sure that they know the position Canada is in? And how can other sectors work with dairy so that really what does come out of it is the best deal that can actually be had in, you know, in some very unknown times?
Well, we've seen it forever, right? Those supply managed sectors, they work very well together. Eggs, turkey, poultry, dairy. And what's been extraordinary to me during all those years, now decades, in the ag industry in Quebec and Canada, is to see those supply managed sectors and export sectors working together to try and maintain this balanced position. And this is very tricky, because in these supply managed sectors, you want to protect the market from the imports. And when you are a beef or maple syrup producer, well, you want to open markets as much as possible because you need to export. But I've seen those people working together, either here in Quebec through the UPA or at the Canadian level through the CFA. I've seen them working together for decades. And this is, to me, one of the most important keys for further success.
So when you speak to that length of experience working together and trying to sort through things like this in the past, are there lessons learned from past trade disputes and negotiations that can help farmers and processors prepare for potential market disruptions coming our way?
Yeah, there is one very important lesson. And we have a phrase in French, prends ton gaz égal. I mean, take a deep breath here, okay? We now know Donald Trump. He says everything that comes through his mind, and we hear the opposite the day after, or quite often the same day. So we need to take a deep breath here and not generate ourselves more anxiety than needed. So Canada is a strong country. We have things that U.S. need. We have, I think, excellent negotiators. And like I said, I don't believe we will get through the revision of COSMA without any changes, but I don't either believe that an increase in TRQs is the most likely scenarios. And for those who would say that supply management won't go through this mandate, I mean, I'm not there at all. I don't see such cataclysm on the horizon.
Well, I love that advice, Vincent. I think just that, take a deep breath, because there is so many unknowns. It really does become hard to prepare or make a plan or do anything when, you know, we don't know. One of the things we have heard from government, though, is that if something does happen, they're prepared to come to the table with COVID level supports in terms of helping Canadians. And I know we saw that in, you know, certain sectors through COVID. I guess what I'm curious is, what do you think that looks like in the agriculture sector? You know, and what is there any kind of crystal balling in terms of what, you know, people in all stripes of agriculture may or may not be able to expect if they do come to the table with supports?
Well, let's assume there would be additional TRQs that would be granted to the U.S. This is not what I think will happen, neither what I hope will happen. You will understand that. But if that happens, we can be confident that those will become compensated the way former concessions have been compensated. Now, let's assume there would be tariffs on either pork or beef flowing from Canada to the U.S. Government would need to support the industries, the whole value chains, to ensure a level playing field. And I think the key expression here is level playing field. And how will either tariff retaliation or any kind of support will ensure those level playing field? It is my understanding, as a citizen who listens to the media, that our government has a plan. I don't know what is this plan. Nobody knows, but nobody knows what will be the attack either. So we need to be confident that this plan will ensure a level playing field. If not, it's going to be the our responsibility as an industry to tell it to the government just to make sure the appropriate corrections are made.
So what about banks and other financial institutions in this situation? Do you think they'll adapt their lending practices to support farmers who are facing economic uncertainty? And I mean, we didn't introduce ourselves a lot at the beginning, but I'm from BC, and I think a lot of economic uncertainty is happening here already without all of these things. So producers would be really interested to know what you think that banks might do in a situation like this.
My employer, a bank, did adapt its products, strategy, and approach in 2020 when COVID hit. I often say that we are not in a lending business or deposit business or rating business. We are in a people's business. Our job is to understand what our clientele is going through and help them going through those situation and help them implementing their short and long-term strategy. So despite what could happen in the next couple weeks, month, or 4 years, ag will have a long-term strategy and farmers will have a long-term strategy. It will be our responsibility to support our clientele during the current, let's say, turmoil, because there might be some turmoil ahead, and then how we can better prepare ourselves for the future. And we need to, I think, the next 4 years, maybe now 1,300 days, many of us count them, they will come to an end at some point. Trump will no longer be the president in 4 years from now, but I don't think it's going to be the end of Trumpism. So this whole new era in terms of business relations at the world level, in terms of protectionism, maybe won't go away. So we need to adapt, and National Bank will do it.
Well, Vincent, I really appreciate you taking the time today. I think it's one of those things of when you do look at so much uncertainty, I'll go back to the fact that, you know, when you said take a deep breath is really good advice. You know, definitely hope for the best, plan for the worst, I think is another really good one. But, you know, and start X-ing the days. 1,300, I guess, is where we're at. 1,299 now. no, but I think just recognizing, you know, that things, as they've always done in our industry, are up to change. But, you know, I'm going to share your optimism and think that all of us in Canadian dairy are up for the challenge. So Vincent Cloutier, thanks very much for joining the Canadian podcast.
Andrew, Sarah, thank you very much.
Well, Andrew, that's a lot to digest. Right away, I was just thinking 1,299 bottles of milk on the wall. We'll just sing that the rest of the time.
The whole day. Every day we can take one down. You know, it is one of those things that it's nice to hear. You know, Vincent clearly is an expert. He spends so much time, you know, focusing on listening to all of those things. A lot of the stuff that he said, you know, I've heard before, but it's nice to attach his optimism with it and just to have that like, okay, we just need to take a break, because you do get so, for me anyway, you get so consumed by, well, what could happen? How do we handle this when we really don't know yet? So it probably is a better case to just kind of, you know, not necessarily sit back, make a few plans in there, but not let the anxiety get to us.
Yeah, that's for sure. I think just the amount of talent and knowledge that surrounds us around the dairy industry, when you think about all the lenders, all the different supports, and the amount of technical detail that those folks know about our industry that we just don't see on the day-to-day is amazing. So I really enjoyed that part.
I really did too. And I think it's one that, you know, certainly as we do go through these, you know, kind of times where we don't really know what will happen, I think it'd be a great idea, Sarah, to draw on some of that expertise and try to bring some of that information in. So we'll have to make sure we bring Vincent and others back on to talk about that kind of stuff. I love talking about it. So
especially if they have positive things to say.
It helps. It helps.
So that said, if you have any comments on this episode or suggestions, you should write to us. We would love to hear from you. We're on Facebook and X. We also have opened a brand new account on Blue Sky, so come give us a follow there. I might actually have to make myself an account over there because
we're so trendy being on Blue Sky, Sarah. I knew we were leading edge, but this takes it to a whole nother level. You can search for the one and only Canadian PodCow. You can also write to us directly, podcast@canadianpodcow.ca. Thanks, Sarah. And to our guest, Vincent Cloutier from the National Bank. Our production team is Bruce Sargent and Carl Bellanger. And special thanks, as always, our sponsor, Dairy Farmers of Canada, for making all of this possible.
And of course, we'd love to thank you for listening to us. We know that's a task some days, but it's a valuable thing to do, and we love having you. We'll talk to you soon on another episode of the Canadian PodCow.